Welcome to Bicom's weekly podcast. I'm Elliot Keck. So we're turning the tables this week with our usual host, Bicom CEO James Serene, in the hot seat to discuss the potential shape of UK foreign policy under in the Middle East under the new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. James, I think it'd be useful first just to kind of recap who the key government figures are in the foreign policy realm on this matter.
Well, I mean, first of all, we've got Boris Johnson as Prime Minister. We've got Dominic Raab, who's been appointed Foreign Secretary. And those are really going to be the most important people in terms of designing the Middle East policy, I would say. I think foreign policy is a much wider issue, and this is a government that is going to be overwhelmingly focused on Brexit. And I think that's the first thing to say, that this is not really a normal government. We've not really had normal politics and government in the UK for some time. And it was very evident yesterday that there is a very short period of time for this government to do the one thing that it's sort of said it's going to do, and that's to leave the EU by October the 31st. And Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been very clear that he's going to do that. And his entire cabinet that he has shaped is around trying to deliver that. And there's really only one division in the UK government and around the cabinet table at the moment. It's not about leaving the EU or not leaving the EU, it's about whether you leave with a deal or without a deal. And that's quite a superficial distinction by some of the people. Essentially, the Prime Minister has already said, we're going to leave. whether we have a deal, that will be great. But if not, we'll leave without a deal. And I think then that means that things like the Middle East aren't really going to be a focus. They're not even in the top five. And I think that's very significant in terms of Middle East watchers who are thinking, what is the UK going to do? One big qualification of that is that there is a crisis going on involving a British flagged oil tanker that was seized by Iran in Omani waters last Friday. That is something that the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary and the Defence Secretary, Ben Wallace, all need to get their head around. And that will be something they need to look at right now.
Yeah, and we published a paper this week kind of outlining Boris Johnson's views and statements on a few key issues in the Middle East. One of those was indeed Iran. The other two were the Gulf and the Israel-Palestine conflict and peace process. So let's kind of talk a bit about those issues, what he thinks about those issues, how he might differ to May, etc.
Well, Boris Johnson's a fascinating individual for many reasons, but when you look at it from the Middle East perspective, there's a kind of double fascination. On one part of his family, his great-grandfather was, I believe, a rabbi. On the other part of his family, his great-grandfather was the last interior minister in the Ottoman Empire. So in some ways, if you look at it as a classic Middle East historian, you could say that's a wonderful mixture of the sort of old Middle East pre the First World War, where, you know, you had the Ottoman Empire and where, you know, the Jewish community was a very important part of that Ottoman Empire. So I think, you know, it's kind of really his own sort of ancestry, I suppose, represents that interesting fusion. I think he does understand key aspects of the Middle East. I think if you look at some of the statements that he's made, he's a really interesting mixture. He talks about being a passionate Zionist. He really gets what the state of Israel is all about, as this kind of dynamic, innovative, modern economy, but also with historic problems and an intractable conflict with the Palestinians that's not been solved. On some sides, when he talks about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, he has a very sort of traditional view of it. If you look at his Telegraph article that he wrote on the centenary of the Balfour Declaration, he was really setting out a classic two-state solution as near as the Israelis and Palestinians got in the most recent sort of extensive negotiations. He was talking about two states, land swaps, in order to deal with not withdrawing from all the 67 borders, a just settlement for the refugees, sharing Jerusalem. You know, he was basically pushing all the buttons of the classic British version of what the two-state solution should look like. What he adds on top of that is a real passion for Israel, a real passion for Zionism, and also one of his most famous quotes, where he was talking about those people that promote boycotts of Israel in some form. He gave a very, very colourful quote in I think it was 2015, where he sort of said, you know, why would anyone in Britain support a boycott of Israel as such an important trade partner for the UK? And he described those who support boycotts as corduroy-wearing, snaggle-toothed lefty academics, which is a typical Boris Johnson, you know, absurdly colourful quote, but also trying to totally demean those people that support boycotts of Israel. And when it comes to things like Israel's right of self-defence, when it's dealing with security issues on his border, I mean, when he was foreign secretary, he was very supportive of Israel's right to self-defence. When Iran fired missiles from positions in Syria in May 2018, he was very forceful about Israel's right to self-defence. He's also defended Israel's right to hit back at Hamas if they fire missiles at Israel. But yet, if you look at the history and what he said back in 2014 during Operation Protective Edge, he was quite critical and sort of jumped on this bandwagon in 2014 as that war kind of ran on for 52 days. And people interpreted Israel's response as what they described as disproportionate as they carried on airstrikes against Hamas in Gaza. He was one of those people that also said it was disproportionate. So I think, you know, there is a limit to his support. And also he's been on record as criticising, you know, settlement expansion.
Very interesting. And maybe let's just kind of move on and expand a bit more on this ongoing Iran crisis. How do you see him kind of finessing the current divide between the EU and the US? Obviously, he seems to possibly be more inclined to the kind of EU position. He says, don't want war with Iran, he supports a nuclear deal. But at the same time, he does kind of he's been seen to be kind of cuddling up a little bit to Donald Trump, who obviously has this kind of maximum pressure campaign. So how does he kind of finesse that divide or that gulf?
Well, there's two incidents that one can really hone in on when it comes to Boris Johnson's record, and these will have a bearing on what he does. And a lot of these things, it's not just about policy, it's also about emotion. It's about his own experience and his own sense of success or failure. And if you look at two incidences, they really were quite stinging failures for him when he was foreign secretary. On the one hand, he traveled to the US just before Donald Trump decided to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal. It was quite a valiant attempt, but it was too little too late. Potentially, he went to the US, he didn't get a meeting with Trump, he did get a meeting with Vice President Pence and the Secretary of State, it didn't have any effect. Trump pulled out of the nuclear deal. I mean, Boris Johnson also tried to, he penned a piece in the New York Times. He went on Fox and Friends, all in an attempt for Donald Trump to see him or read him or at least have read to him what he had said about trying to get the US to stay in the nuclear deal. It was a complete failure, and he didn't achieve anything from that. And the US pulled out of the nuclear deal. So that's Iran experience number one on the high diplomacy. On the micro diplomacy, there's the stinging failure. And the example that's constantly brought up of the case of Nazanin Nagari Ratcliffe, who is a British-Iranian dual national who worked at the Reuters Institute in the UK. And when she went to Iran, she was detained by Iran, charged with espionage, and she's now serving a prison sentence of being treated very, very badly by the Iranian regime. Why is this relevant? Because when Boris Johnson was talking about her, he said that she was in Tehran, in Iran, teaching journalism, which was not accurate, and I think a confusion by Boris Johnson of the fact that she worked at the Thomson Reuters Institute in the UK and that she wasn't certainly in Iran teaching journalism. So this was something that was, you know, that the critics of Boris Johnson seized upon and said, you know, this is the kind of Boris Johnson that you don't want to see, who is not a master of his brief, who is not on top of the detail, makes a mistake like this. The Iranians pounced on it as a reason to even inflict a harsher punishment on Nazanin Nagari Ratcliffe. And her family were very unhappy with the way that Boris Johnson went about supporting them when he was foreign secretary, and when Jeremy Hunt was foreign secretary, he made a point of taking a very different approach and involving them a lot more in his diplomatic efforts to try and free her. So from his perspective, his own dealing with the Iranian regime would be a very, very bad experience for him with that case. And so he really does have a history with the Iranian regime. And I think he will go into this particular issue with the British flagged oil tanker with all that in mind. And also the fact that he's known to get on well with Donald Trump. Donald Trump likes him. And that will also be fed into the calculations at number 10 and elsewhere of, like, what on earth does Britain do? And the interpretation of what's been happening over the last couple of weeks is that Britain was reluctant to go full throttle into some kind of joint maritime protection force of the US and the UK in order to protect its vessels in the Persian Gulf, because it would be seen as too aligned with the US approach to Iran. And let's remind ourselves that the current US approach to Iran is pulled out of the nuclear deal, maximum pressure with sanctions, and also doing things like potentially considering military strikes on Iran after they shot down an Iranian drone. So when Jeremy Hunt and Theresa May were considering what to do, they were at pains, I think, not to jump in full throttle with the US, and they talked about setting up a European maritime force. Now we have a new prime minister, we have a new foreign secretary. Who knows what they will do? You know, they may just think that they can just play this one out, and there are different considerations here. Quite frankly, this is a British flagged oil tanker, but all the crew are not British. There are no British nationals on board. If this was a British crew and they were British nationals, or it was a similar situation to 2007 where British sailors were held by Iran for more than 2 weeks, it would be very, very different. So, you know, quite frankly, they are not British nationals, but obviously Britain owes them a duty of protection and wants to free them and the ship, and wants to solve the issues of freedom of navigation. But they could decide, you know, let's just play this one out, let's just negotiate, let's not do anything drastic. On the other hand, Boris Johnson could use this as an early test of the kind of prime minister he wants to be, to try and show what, you know, he's going to be like, protecting British interests around the world. This gives him an opportunity to shape that. And he will either be interpreted as strong or weak in a very kind of simplistic tabloid way. And you know, if he sends in the Navy to go, you know, in a much more forceful response to escort all British ships, if he ups the ante and decides to send the Royal Marines in with their speedboats to protect ships, you know, this will be interpreted as, you know, he is forcibly defending British interests, and this is the kind of prime minister he's going to be. Or he could just decide that Brexit is the main priority. You know, he's not going to have the bandwidth to get involved in a kind of hour by hour crisis with Iran, and he'll allow others to get on with the job. So we really will wait and see.
Let's briefly segue onto the kind of the third issue that our paper looks at, which is the Gulf. I mean, the kind of Gulf crisis with the ongoing blockade of Qatar is a less pressing geopolitical issue, but at the same time, in light of Brexit and the importance of many Gulf countries to the UK, I mean, how do you see kind of Boris Johnson approaching the Gulf and British partners in the Gulf?
Well, Britain has an interesting relationship with Qatar, which is that, you know, on the one hand, it's very friendly with Saudi and other Gulf countries. We have extensive defence contracts with Qatar you know, huge inward investment from Qatar. There's a lot of trade. So, you know, it's certainly not a country that we can have any kind of embargo with. So, you know, I think in terms of British foreign policy, we would like everyone to get along in the Gulf. But at the same time, there are very real issues about Qatar's support for serious terrorist organisations in the Middle East, like Hamas and others, and that's hugely problematic. And Qatar is also close to Iran, so you know, in some ways, Britain wants to straddle you know, these divisions and wants everyone to get along. But you know, we are close to Saudi Arabia, we are close to the UAE. These are very important partnerships, and the fact that Israel is getting closer to Saudi and the UAE and others is also complements Britain's relationship with Israel. Let's not forget, 20 years ago and beyond, that would have been a very serious fault line in the relationship, and Britain would be, you know, falling over itself and doing all sorts of sort of elaborate pirouettes to try and, you know, diplomatically get around the fact that it has relations with Israel and trade with Israel and also with Saudi and the Gulf. Now that's all gone away. It's all to the good. And the fact that Britain has good relations with, say, Saudi and the Gulf and Israel is just another part of British diplomacy. So the world has changed in that sense. What will happen in the future? I think, look, in terms of British trade, and it's something that BICOM did in its research recently, where we highlighted that, you know, British trade, even potential trade with Iran and current trade with Iran, is very, very small. Compared to France and Germany, it's almost minimal. So, you know, Britain will always prioritise its trade relations with Israel, with Saudi, with Qatar, with the UAE, etc. But at the same time, the Iran issue is a crisis that needs to be solved, and Britain has not yet got round this issue that it wants to stay in the nuclear deal. Britain believes that the nuclear deal is the best way to stop Iran acquiring a nuclear weapon. And Britain, along with France and Germany, has basically been playing for time. And some people would argue that they've done a very, very effective job of really treading water since Donald Trump pulled out of the nuclear deal. Britain, France and Germany have kind of convinced Iran for a long time not really to do anything. That really ran out of road this year on the anniversary of the US pulling out. And now we've got a situation where Iran is violating the nuclear deal. It's breached its cap on its stockpile of enriched uranium. It is enriching uranium to a higher percentage, now almost coming up to 5%. And these are serious violations of the nuclear deal. So Britain ultimately over the next few weeks really does need to make a choice. Is it going to, you know, carry on treading water and coming up with all sorts of initiatives to try and just keep Iran talking in the hope that at some point the US will reach some kind of de-escalation and early talks with the US? That looks like it might happen. Donald Trump appointed Rand Paul as like his Iran envoy recently. And we know that when the Iranian foreign minister was in New York last week, he had talks with various people in the US. So things seem to be happening, but Britain really still does have that choice and it hasn't decided yet.
And maybe just a brief word on Dominic Raab. Boris Johnson is known for delegating, is known for kind of empowering his officials and his people. So maybe just a brief word on Dominic Raab and what he might be like.
Yeah, I mean, what we know about Dominic Raab is that he was a very short-lived Brexit secretary. He was the Secretary of State for exiting the European Union. He was there for a very short period of time. And really, his record is a strange one. He kind of went away and he helped negotiate this withdrawal agreement from the EU, and then he resigned because he didn't like it. So he was very short-lived, and I think the EU, someone in the EU made a comment this morning that he was the third worst Brexit secretary, i.e. the worst ever, because there's only ever been three. So they were not very complimentary about him. But I think, you know, let's look at his record. I mean, he's a lawyer by training. He actually was one of only two former Foreign Office diplomats to go on to become Foreign Secretary. You know, his mind is a legal mind. He studied international law, and he did legal advisor's work at the Foreign Office. So I think, you know, it's interesting that when you look at some of the things he's written about with regard to, say, Israel and the Palestinians, he comes at it from quite a legalistic perspective. You know, he's talked about recognition of a Palestinian state and why that's not the right thing to do. I expect him to be quite legalistic. I expect him probably to sort of toe a bit of a previous line with the Foreign Office around Israel and the Palestinians, like wanting a two-state solution, criticising Israel for expanding settlements or doing things that puts a two-state solution too far into the distance or makes it unviable. I can't really see him getting into the real detail of Israel-Palestinian relations, of wider issues in the Middle East. I think he will delegate that largely to his Middle East minister, who, let's not forget, Andrew Murison, if he does stay on in that post, he's only been there himself for a few weeks after Alistair Burt, who'd been there for a very long time, resigned. So you've got new people all around. But I think Dominic Raab on the Middle East, my tip would be he will delegate almost everything to the Middle East minister. He will focus on Brexit. He will focus on, you know, building the big foreign relations with the key partners after Brexit. I think he will obviously get involved in the crises. I think we will first see what he thinks when it comes to things like Iran. That's his first big test.
Thank you, James. I think that's it for this week. If you enjoyed this podcast, please like it, rate it, review it, share it on social media, and we'll see you next week with James interviewing once again.
Thank you.